Blog Talk Radio.
Goodbye, Joe. Me gotta go. Me, oh my, oh. Me gotta go. Pull the P-Row down the bayou. My Yvonne, the sweetest one. Me, oh my, oh. Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bayou. Jambalaya, crawfish pie, filet gumbo. Cause tonight I'm gonna see Mama Shazamio. Pick guitar, fill fruit jar, and be gay, oh. Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bayou.
And every moment of every day, your 17 trillion cells are dying and reproducing, mitosing, being reborn. And the question is, are you contributing towards healthy cellular generation and regeneration? Or is your lifestyle and your diet and even the way you think about your lifestyle and your diet and your life itself causing some kind of upheaval in your genetic reproduction and causing mutations on your DNA so that you are not as healthy in the next cellular phase as you were in the previous? So this question and more we can answer here on Eating for Meaning, and I'm your host. My name is Dr. Millie Lytle. I'm a naturopathic doctor, a naturopathic physician here in New York, and this show is being broadcast to you live from the Double Diamond Wellness Center on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And I want to thank Sam Leibovitz here at the Double Diamond Wellness Center for allowing me to tape my show here today. And I've got a very exciting guest today. I've got an exciting guest, and her name is Dr. Nora Pope. Dr. Nora Pope is a colleague of mine, and she is a board-certified naturopathic physician in private practice in Toronto since 2002. We actually graduated together. We were in the same medical school together. Dr. Nora Pope has a special interest in women's health, in epilepsy, in Marfan syndrome, fertility literacy, and harnessing drug-herb interactions to increase treatment efficacy. She's a graduate of McGill University and the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine. She trained as a natural family planning medical consultant auditor at Creighton University School of Medicine. And in addition, she is also a Creighton Model Fertility Care Practitioner, and we're going to learn all about that and more. Dr. Pope is a member of the OAND, the Ontario Association of Naturopathic Doctors. She's a member of the Canadian Association of Naturopathic Doctors, and she's a past executive member of the Association of Perinatal Naturopathic Doctors. She's written about epilepsy, neurology, perinatal care, how to collaborate with other healthcare practitioners, and cycle charting for several naturopathic and midwifery publications. And most recently, I believe, she wrote an article called Day 21 No More for the Naturopathic Doctor's News and Review, and you can check that out either on ndnr.com under fertility, on Dr. Pope's Facebook page, or also on my Facebook page, because I'm reposting this article as we speak. Dr. Pope is also a popular public speaker and has presented in allopathic or medical and naturopathic audiences around Toronto and different places as well. And she is here today. She's an NFP advocate and looks forward to the day when all women attain fertility literacy and know when they are fertile. Dr. Pope, welcome. So glad that you're here with me today. Welcome to Eating for Meaning.
I'm still sitting on my chair, Millie. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. I'm blown away. That was very kind of you.
It's amazing when you see your bio in front of you and then you're like, wow, I've done that? Wow, over all of these years. So congratulations, and I'm so excited to have you on because we do go way back. We were in school together. We graduated together. And we actually were original members and helped form, and we sat on the executive together of the Association of Perinatal Naturopathic Doctors. So we've worked a lot together in the past, and I'm so happy to hear what you're up to these days.
Well, thank you. No, I'm really excited to be here. I love New York City, and New York has been kind to me and you and naturopathic doctors. Naturopathic medicine was born in New York City in 1902, and I've done some speaking at NYU on epilepsy, and I've always tie in charting your cycle when I'm dealing with any kind of, you know, female patient population, because sometimes seizures can be triggered by a hormone imbalance. And that's why I just love cycle charting in my practice, because all kinds of women from all ages will benefit from it.
And so what does that mean, that cycle charting can be triggered with hormone imbalances?
Well, basically...
what does that mean, that epilepsy can be triggered by hormone imbalances?
Well, you know, I don't mean to sound esoteric, but the older I get and the more years I stay in practice, I see more and more interrelationships, especially with the brain. Lately, there was a study that just came out that the use of the oral contraceptive pill can increase the risk of brain cancer. Now, what is it about the brain and hormones? Well, we have progesterone receptors in the brain. And I'm beginning to wonder if we have progesterone receptors in every organ in our body. But, you know, that's for another topic. So our bodies are complex beyond belief. So with some women who get seizures, some women will get an increased number of seizures in times of their cycle where their progesterone might be too low. Ideally, in the first half of your cycle, in a perfect world, estrogen is rising and then falling right before ovulation. And then right after ovulation, progesterone starts to rise and then fall before the next period. So if your progesterone isn't rising properly, especially in the second half of your cycle, it could trigger a seizure, because progesterone balance can ensure health balance of the brain. And I just find the new study that just came out very, very topical, that a progesterone imbalance in the brain can either lead to seizures and now perhaps brain cancer. So, you know, we have hormone receptors all over our body. It's not just for reproduction. It's for health and maintaining health.
Yeah, absolutely. And our fat cells store hormones as well. And so that's definitely where estrogen can be accessed. And I'm not aware of how much progesterone compared to estrogen is stored in our fat cells, but questions like that, and especially with the release of that new study, definitely do stimulate the profession that's involved in fertility literacy and natural fertility to question those and to use that as information to guide us and to help more women get off the birth control pill. And that's, in fact, what we're talking today. We're talking today about fertility, and we're talking about fertility literacy. And for those of you who are just tuning in, I'm interviewing Dr. Nora Pope, naturopathic physician, on a growing area of concern for women in childbearing years. And even before we plan to get pregnant, so many women, I mean, it's at least 50% of the women. Do you know the statistics on how many women are taking birth control pills, Dr. Pope?
Yeah, no, what I know for sure is that amongst prescriptions for the oral contraceptive pill in teenagers, 17% of those prescriptions are for non-contraceptive reasons. So we have millions of girls being put on the pill because they suffer from acne, or they suffer from no periods. They're not even ovulating. Or they suffer from irregular periods. Or they have terrible cramps. Or they have terrible PMS. And so rather than deal with the underlying cause, many doctors will say, okay, when you decide to start a family, we'll deal with your hormone imbalance then. In the meantime, let's postpone the solution. Let's suppress your discomfort. And call me back in 10 years, sort of thing. And I find I would like this practice to stop. I want to see doctors take an interest in treating the hormone imbalance when it presents itself, especially in teenage girls. Because the research shows that if a girl as a teenager is put on the pill, she has a very significant increased risk of bone loss and osteoporosis at a much younger age, especially when the pill was given when you're a teenager. Another alarming trend is that teenage girls put on the pill have decreased fertility, increased sterility, and lower ovarian reserve, especially if they're put on the pill as teenagers. So the big question is, were they informed of this? Informed consent is the cornerstone, for that matter. And I don't feel patients and parents are being informed of all of these long-term effects of the pill. So I want parents to get more exposure to good information, and I want teenage girls to have other options. Because the trend follows, if you start the pill as a teenager, you're staying on it into your 20s. What I'm very happy about, and I've noticed this in the last 18 months, is a growing interest on questioning the pill because of these health risks. So I'm very, very excited about this trend because there's a lot of evidence out there showing that the pill, you know, can do basic things like just basic drug-induced nutrient deficiencies. If you're on the pill, you got to be bumping up on the B vitamins, on folic acid, on vitamin D, because those get leached in the actual metabolism of the pill. Also, the pill can increase your risk for sexually transmitted infections because by leaching the B vitamins, your cervix is more vulnerable to improper cell recovery, cell turnover, cell division. These natural processes of regeneration get diminished, and that can increase your risk to the human papillomavirus. So another reason, and these have been published extensively in the last 15 to 20 years. So on and on it goes. It's a carcinogen, according to the World Health Organization. This is, for the last 10 years, the World Health Organization has added the pill to its list of carcinogens. Increased risk of breast cancer, increased risk of brain cancer now, stroke and embolism, we've known that for many, many years. Death for some people, unfortunately, some OCPs can cause death. On and on it goes. Depression, decreased libido. So I find this all ironic. You're on the pill because you want to be sexually active, but then your libido's decreased. So I think for these reasons and more young women are questioning the pill and they're getting off the pill. So that's why I'm very excited about fertility literacy, because fertility literacy can be used as a form of natural family planning, a non-toxic form of family planning, and it becomes a tool to diagnose yourself. Gee, I have a hormone imbalance. Gee, I could be at risk for infertility. Gee, I could be at risk for seizures. And on it goes. So as you can see, I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, I mean, you've made so many great points already, and I absolutely agree with you. I mean, young girls are being put on the birth control pill even at the recommendation of their mothers in some case, because their mothers were put on the birth control pill and people tend to feel comfortable with what happened to them. And so for decades now, young women have been put on the birth control pill to manage everything from normal childhood acne or irregular periods, because it does take time for periods to start. And they actually get diagnosed, I believe, with really subclinical conditions that could otherwise be treated by simple means or with education. Not only that, we know that there's an estrogenization of the world going on and that we're consuming and overly exposed to estrogens, and primarily that's what the birth control pill is. It's overriding our own body's production of hormones and substituting it with a synthetic dose of hormones on a daily basis. In fact, all the while leading to more estrogenization, more sterilization, the fact that more women are seeking help with fertility issues requiring more in vitro fertilization or all these things. I don't think that it's an accident that these are the women who have been on the birth control pill for years and years. Not only is underreported how long it takes to get pregnant after going off of the birth control pill, most doctors tell their patients that it's 3 months, but in actual fact, studies show it's anywhere up to 18 months can be a normal length of time, which really on an energetic level makes absolute sense that if you've been suppressing your fertility for all of that time, how could it possibly be that all of a sudden your body's going to kick into gear again just because you've gone off the pill? Not only you're left with all of these nutrient deficiencies, essential nutrient deficiencies, including, as you mentioned, folic acid, which does tend to be depleted in most North American women, partially due to the birth control pill prescription, rampant birth control pill prescription. And so I'm so glad to hear that it's a trend that women are starting to come off the birth control pill. I actually had not noticed that. And even in my practice, I hadn't noticed that women are starting to come off the birth control pill. And what the other issue here is that the natural fertility methods have been so demonized. Even I remember when I was a teenager myself and being recommended to go on the pill, and then the fact that all of the natural methods, they would call them withdrawal, or they would call them rhythm method, all these things that kind of make it derogatory to pay attention to your own body signals, when in actual fact, most women don't even know that you cannot get pregnant every day of the month. They don't even know what their period means. They don't even know what their body's telling them. And so this is an exciting topic for me as well, because I really do, this was one of my initial passions. And as I mentioned, we were forming members of the Association of Perinatal Naturopathic Doctors in Toronto, which is an organization that has come to New York now. And that organization helps women achieve fertility naturally and helps them anywhere in their nutritional status to their fertility efforts, balancing their hormones so that they can achieve a healthy, happy pregnancy, and then even a happy, healthy, natural birth and postpartum period. And we support those women using nutrition and natural remedies, so homeopathy and herbs and supplements. And so it's exciting that the fact that it could be changing, that women are coming off the birth control pill, we make our job a lot easier in terms of trying to help women out with fertility.
Mm-hmm. No, I think what happens when you go on the pill is that you create fertility illiteracy. And fertility literacy really should be taught at the grade school level, at the high school level. It's human biology. It's human reproduction. And basically, the attitude is, I don't want to hear about it, I don't want to talk about it, only when I want to start a family. Well, it's part of your health. It's part of your health. You don't have to want to have a baby right now to learn about your fertility. And
you could actually not want to have a baby and learn about your fertility. It's helpful for contraception.
Yeah. No, it's just the natural regulation of fertility has been of interest to humankind for thousands and thousands of years. And I think what's the kind of system I use and I teach my patients is really based, it's called the ovulation method, or I'm trained actually in the Creighton model method. And really the telltale sign of hormones changing in your body is the presence of cervical fluid. And I think, you know, it's a topic that is very intimate and it's not exactly mainstream, but I hope it does become more mainstream as the years go by. Let's talk about sugar and water. It really, to start conception, you need sugar and water. If you look at the man, seminal fluid is really a lot of sugar and water. That's what keeps sperm alive for days and days and days and days and days. In the woman's body, cervical fluid is sugar and water, biochemically identical to seminal fluid. So we ovulate, you know, roughly one egg each month. Occasionally we'll release two eggs if in the case of fraternal twins, but typically we release one egg each month. That egg is only alive less than 24 hours. How is it that we all are born? I mean, let's talk about, you know, bullseye sex. It just doesn't happen that way. Why we're all born is that a woman's fertile window is lengthened when she starts having rising blood estrogens prior to ovulation. That rising blood estrogen will trigger her cervix to produce cervical fluid, which is rich in sugar and water. And her entire body, then her inner body, is sperm friendly for those days. And what I mean by sperm friendly is that sperm can stay alive in her body for days and days and days, up to 10 days, but typically up to 5 days. So conception can occur because the sperm is waiting. It swam up her body during, you know, ejaculation. It swam up the cervix, up the vagina, up the uterus, and into the fallopian tubes where conception takes place. The egg gets
released. It's fought off all those other sperms.
Sorry?
And it's fought off all those other sperms to be the winning sperm.
Yes, right. It's a group sport. They're all banging away at the shell of the egg, and then only one guy wins. So anyway, I shouldn't say guy, one sperm, because sperm can be either male or female, but that's another matter. Anyway, so conception occurs in the fallopian tube, and then roughly 6 to 7 or 8 days, implantation will occur in the uterus, and then pregnancy will continue. So this is basically the nuts and bolts of human reproduction, is that we produce the cervical fluid. And this was discovered decades ago in the 1960s by Australian doctors John and Evelyn Billings. And then the Creighton model turned this information into your chart as a diagnostic tool, as a medical application. That was done by Hilgers and his team at Creighton University, and that's where I studied this system. And I'm indebted to these doctors. I'm indebted to them because they have enriched my knowledge of women's health. And so the fact that you can identify these days of fertility when you're charting, what reveals sadly now in 2015 is a lack of fertility. I've been doing this since 1994. The typical chart of the 90s, you had a woman bleed for 5 days, very, very, that's healthy and normal, and then X number of dry days, and then about 5 or 6 days of what we call white flow, or those cervical fluid days rich in sugar and water. Very healthy, and then bang, it stops. It stops quite abruptly because it correlates to the rising estrogen. Rising estrogen peaks and then drops abruptly. So that peak day, that last day of estrogen, correlates very highly to ovulation because that peak in estrogen triggers luteinizing hormone. It's very, very well synchronized.
Textbook women, just to give people a little bit of context, day one is first day of a bleed, so that's day one of the menstrual cycle. Day 14 would be in the textbook woman, although it does not have to be day 14. But day 14 is considered mid-cycle ovulatory day when the luteinizing hormone peaks, triggers ovulation.
Yes. Now, but what's healthy and normal is that time before ovulation can be highly variable for all kinds of reasons. Some women's estrogen ramps up really quickly, and they ovulate sooner. They ovulate around day 10. Or some women's estrogen goes up and down and up and down and up and down, and they're going to ovulate later. This up and down pattern, this is very typical of PCOS because the follicle in the ovary isn't producing enough estrogen. And there's up and down, up and down. So you're going to have cervical fluid come and go, come and go, come and go. And eventually you'll ovulate maybe 2-3 times a year. And that's typical of PCOS. And so the chart, when you're charting your cycle, becomes a diagnostic tool, becomes a roadmap to your physiology. Anyway, so I'm going to keep going. So ovulation occurs, boom, I call that the peak day. And then you have something called your post-peak phase, which is your luteal phase or your progesterone-driven phase. So if you had a good follicle growth, grow to 2.2 centimeters, and then it erupts, and it basically hatches the egg, that follicle will shrink, become a corpus luteum, a yellow body, and produce progesterone for roughly textbook 14 days. But in a healthy woman, that can range anywhere from 9 to 16 days. What you want, though, in health is 5 days of bleed, a good 5 days of the cervical fluid, and then a stable post-peak phase, a stable luteal phase. It doesn't vary from month to month. If that post-peak phase varies from month to month to month to month, that's a sign of something called LUF, luteinized unruptured follicle, because basically your body is producing progesterone that's rising and falling and rising and falling and rising and falling, prolonged post-peak phase, and then eventually you have a bleed. So this is fascinating information that gets revealed when you start charting. So why I'm so excited about charting as well is that, you know, women come to me and saying, you know, I get tested for progesterone on day 21 of my cycle. So the guess is, the assumption is you ovulate on day 14, 7 days later, that's mid-luteal, and you get tested. This is wrong. You should be tested 7 days after your peak day. So if you have a short cycle and you peak on day 10, then you get your blood test on day 17. Or if you have a long cycle and you ovulate on day 20, then you should get your blood tested on peak on day 27. Why I find this so important is that women get improperly tested, and the doctor can say, oh my God, your progesterone's too low, and you need 400 milligrams a day of progesterone. This is bad medicine. Her progesterone's not low. It's just that she peaked sooner or later, according to her body. And so I'm a big believer in ethical medicine. And to ethically test and measure and diagnose and treat and prescribe the right amount of hormones, you got to read the woman's individual cycle, not some textbook. That's why I say day 21, no more. That should be banned from testing for progesterone. It should be peak plus 7. That's the new terminology I want to see. And I call that medicine driven by physiology. So that's why I get so passionate about this.
Okay, so I'm just going to put this all into, to attempt to put this into lay people's terms, because you lose a lot of technical language there. And so basically, for those women who are listening at home, what a natural fertility specialist, such as Dr. Nora Pope here, means is that she can tell based on different symptoms at different points in your period as to whether or not you are ovulating and whether or not this ovulation is likely to become a fertilized egg, and that your menstrual cycle, your overall ovulatory cycle, your 28-day cycle, sometimes 40 for some women, sometimes 21 for some, is functioning in a way that it's possible to become pregnant, and also how to avoid becoming pregnant based on symptoms that your body produces. And so what we're talking about on this show, we're talking about fertility literacy, and we're talking about handing over this information to you, because you as a woman, this is your information to know about your own cycle and about your own chart, so that you can use this information to apply it to whatever your fertility goals are at the moment. If you're using it for contraception purposes, or if you're using it for fertility purposes, if you're ready to have a baby. And so I'm so excited to have Dr. Nora Pope here today, and this is what we're talking about. I'm going to go to commercial break, and when we come back, we are going to start talking about charting and how to use charting and in order to benefit your own lifestyle, your relationships, and also get off that nasty pill.
She wants to know where the relationship is going. He didn't know it was going anywhere. Having an awareness of our differences can make or break a relationship. As men and women, we have no problem falling in love. The problem is staying in love. Janice Hoffman gives men and women easy-to-use tools to keep the passion alive in their relationship. The former training director for Mars Venus Institute, Janice Hoffman trained over 550 Mars Venus facilitators and counselors and developed curriculum for the Mars Venus workshops. Today, she is the award-winning author of Relationship Rules, 12 Strategies for Creating a Love That Lasts. Don't do more in your relationship. Do what you already do differently. Let Janice Hoffman teach you the skills to keep the passion alive. Get the passion back with Relationship Rules. Visit JaniceHoffman.com today and get your own autographed copy of Relationship Rules.
Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com, the largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today and meet your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on SpiritualSingles.com. That's SpiritualSingles.com.
And welcome back to the show. This is Dr. Millie, and this is Eating for Meaning. And Eating for Meaning is a nutrition program designed to help you fix your relationship to food. And the reason you want to fix your relationship to food is so that you can prevent and treat chronic illness, you can improve your body image, you can enjoy your food more, and you can reduce any food-related symptoms and discover them on your own. And if you're interested in Eating for Meaning, this is a year-long nutrition program, and you can check it out at my website at www.milliesays.com. But today we are talking about a different health topic. We are talking about fertility literacy, and I have Dr. Nora Pope, naturopathic physician. She is in Toronto while I am in New York. And if you are interested in consulting with Dr. Pope on fertility literacy, Dr. Pope, how do they get in touch with you?
I practice in Toronto at the Isis Naturopathic Clinic, and our website is one word, isisclinic.ca. And so I do consultations of long distance and in person, and that's how they can reach me, isisclinic.ca.
So if you are interested in, if you are in Toronto, which is in Canada, for those of you who do not know where I'm originally from, and that's where I went to school with Dr. Pope, or if you are in New York or anywhere else in the United States or all around the world, then you can still consult with Dr. Pope. And I definitely recommend that you also check out her article, which was published in NDNR just last month, which is the Naturopathic Doctors News and Review, called Day 21 No More. And I was also confused by the title, and I'm so glad that you clarified it last segment. And that means that just because your progesterone is not peaking at day 21 does not mean that you are not fertile. And the medical doctors are doing you a disservice because they are reading your hormones wrong. And we are here to help you. I'm just going to say it because I don't care. I'm sick of it. And so,
yeah, no, there's very little interest in fertility. When I was growing up, there was this anxiety about the overpopulation, and there was a strong, you know, contraceptive mentality taking over, and babies were bad. And I, you know, here we are in 2015, and I think the opposite is happening. I call it baby boomer malaise, is that we just, maybe there aren't enough babies being born now because baby boomers have the biggest pensions that I know of, which isn't fair. And they're thinking, oh my God, who's going to pay for all this? So now there's an interest in the natural regulation of fertility and fertility awareness, because I think people are realizing that fertility is, you know, is getting in short supply. You mentioned earlier, Millie, Dr. Millie, that the pill is polluting the planet. I think it's really important to know that the pill has an indirect effect on men's sperm counts. Sperm counts are declining, and this should be alarming all of us. And they've been declining for quite some time. A study done in Denmark about 12 years ago, the study was analyzing data of why pregnancy rates in 20-year-olds were declining. Now, 20-year-olds in Denmark were having just as much sex as people 10 years before, but when they analyzed everything, they noticed that the male sperm count in Denmark had declined by 50%. And here in Toronto, actually, the Planned Parenthood in Toronto mentioned teen pregnancy rates are down, but sexually transmitted infections are up. So teenagers in Toronto are still having sex because STIs are up. But
and still unprotected sex.
Yeah, they were happy that teen pregnancy was down. So this attitude has to change. We should be happy that teen pregnancy is up. If more teens are having sex, we should be happy because that means we're healthy and normal. So the fact that teen pregnancies are down is alarming. That teenagers now, teenagers are less fertile. What's going to happen when they're in their 20s and 30s? So pregnancy has been viewed as a burden. It's unsafe. It's been described as a disease, that pregnancy is unsafe. And this has impacted. And the decline of midwifery happened, I think, as a result in the 60s and 70s because of this fear and this negativity around pregnancy. So, again, I want to reiterate to our listeners, charting is not about making babies. Fertility literacy is not about making babies. It's about health literacy, health awareness, health promotion, because the brain is related to fertility. Seizures are related to fertility. Eczema, psoriasis, asthma, chronic illness I see in my practice is related to fertility. When you are infertile and have a hormonal imbalance, your body is more vulnerable to other imbalances. I've seen this a lot. I treat women who have terrible psoriasis. So that means addressing the skin, addressing their immune system, and then they get pregnant. So your hormones and your health have so many interconnections. Let's not ignore it. Let's not suppress it. Let's not go on the pill and ignore it. Let's deal with it and learn about it and learn about our bodies. So there, that's my soapbox.
Yeah, it's very interesting because when you tell me that teen pregnancy is down, you know, even my brain turns to the fact that, oh, public health efforts are working and teens are wearing more condoms. But no, what you're saying is that no, teens are not wearing more condoms because they're actually experiencing just as much and even increased levels of STDs than they were before. Mm-hmm. And actually what's happening is that girls are on the birth control pill and being less careful about using condoms because they think that they're protected from pregnancy. And this is affecting overall not only female fertility, but male fertility as well. Mm-hmm. And what really infuriates me is all of the, what I would say is a long word, iatrogenesis, which is medicine induces harm in our population. And this is something that we just take for granted, that everybody needs the birth control pill and we need to go on it because there's no other way to be in control of our fertility and our womanhood and make the decision for ourselves when we want to have a baby, which of course is absolutely important. But that normal physiology, innate, inborn physiology capabilities, the ability of for ourselves to identify when we are fertile and when we are not, has just been almost eradicated. It's almost like genocide against. It's another form of misogyny. I mean, I really do think that it is, not to get too feminist on it, but the feminist approach
for a woman. Get feminist. I like it.
Yeah, because the feminist approach is actually for a woman to know and own her own body based on knowledge, not just on having a tool like the birth control pill that she's conned into thinking is benign, although advantageous, until she's 40 years old, and then all of a sudden, you know, for some reason clues in that she's not likely to become a mother if she doesn't do it, like, tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And so this whole thing just infuriates, it actually made me get out of birth, Nora, to be honest, because I was so frustrated with the culture of it all, that people just were relying on the birth control pill for so long to delay, and then by the time they realized they actually wanted a baby, you know, it's too late. You've been on the birth control pill for 20 years. It's too late. And it's not the woman's fault. It's the medical culture.
No, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, yeah, because we are, in a way, we are postponing adulthood by divorcing sexual activity with fertility. And we just want it to be just recreation or just fertility. I find this, it's really schizophrenic. I talked in my article about this charting as being a spiritual bridge between the sexes. And I find this over and over and over again. A couple will come to see me, and some of them want to use the charting to actually postpone pregnancy. So I give them this data. This is very well researched. If you take 100 couples who want to use charting to postpone pregnancy as a natural way of postponing pregnancy, 21% change their mind within the first 12 months. And I think this is very interesting, because what happens is that, for once, fertility is not ghettoized just on the woman. Fertility is shown and revealed as a collaboration, a shared act between a healthy man and a healthy woman. And I say healthy because you need to be healthy to be fertile. And so, because I think what happens is that when you segregate sex and fertility, you know, women become sex objects. And you're right to be feminist. If a fertile couple temporarily impose infertility with the pill, the woman can become a sex object because there's an expectation that she has to deliver sex on demand. And then what I see, which is the flip side of this, is that when I see an infertile couple come to see me and they really want to temporarily impose fertility, like they want a baby only in the next 12 months or else, the man becomes a sex object because he's expected to deliver sex on demand. So
that's very interesting. It's so much tension and pressure.
It's like I see this over and over and over again, that because you haven't integrated and looked at the duality of sex and fertility. It's both. It's for pleasure and fertility. It's for both. Cats and dogs just have sex to reproduce. When the woman's in heat, she's always fertile. That's when they have sex. But in humans, sexuality is both. It's about communication. It's about intimacy. It's about human bonding, emotional bonding. And it's about
building.
Relationship building. And it's about being aware that an outcome, it can be, if you're healthy, you have a shared fertility together. You know, when I hear the news say, oh, in 2012, more Canadian women gave birth than ever before. No, it's more healthy men and women gave birth than ever before. It's a shared act. Or, oh my God, the birth rate in women is declining, you know, or women are not having babies. No, it's men and women not having babies. And so I think feminism and charting are ways to bring the reproductive end result in a more integrated way. It's a shared act between healthy men and women. And then I think what happens is that you have an appreciation of the feminine when men get more involved. And I love the spiritual sort of aspects of charting because it bridges communication in this, you know, shared act and the end result of either postponing pregnancy or achieving pregnancy, because the act can do both. So,
yeah, and that's beautiful. And I'm not gonna reveal anything about your personal life, but for me, I'm a 39-year-old woman who has never been pregnant, who's never been on the pill except for maybe a few months when I was a teenager, and it, you know, destroyed my mood and my skin and everything. And so I've been doing charting for basically that long because that's the way that you do it when you refuse to go on the pill. And then, of course, I became a naturopathic doctor and all of the rest of it. So, but is it only naturopathic doctors who are charting? I kind of sometimes get the feeling that it is, and our patients.
Yes. There's really, it's becoming more and more wide mainstream. I think in the early 20th century, it was medical research was done in laboratories all over the world, in Japan and Sweden. Actually, there's a man in Sweden I want to mention. His name is, oh my God, now I'm blanking out. Okay, it's going to come back to me. He is 94. He deserves the Nobel Prize. Erik Odeblad, that's his name. Erik Odeblad discovered cervical fluid, and he is an MRI specialist, and he's won an award in Sweden for his work in MRIs, and he's done the MRIs of the cervix, and he has studied cervical fluid. There are
he didn't discover it.
Okay, my point is, in the 20th century, it was a very high-tech sort of lab-based interest in this. And what's happened now, there's been an explosion in the mainstream about, fertility curiosity, because I think for so long, fertility was segregated for human reproduction and only human reproduction. So only learn about it when you want to start a baby. And this is wrong. Fertility is a health marker. It's a health marker. And I think that's why there's so much interest, because mainstream is now much more interested in the interrelationships in our health with the environment, with diet, with food, with medication or not, with supplements or not. And then there's the mental-emotional aspect of culture. So I really, I'm very, very excited. I've really seen a shift in very recently. But I like to talk about, if I can, Millie, how charting actually works. So people can get sort of, okay. So basically, what does charting mean? It means getting a chart, you know, getting a graph. I work with the Creighton model because I just find that it's you know, a very robust system. But there are many, many out there. And basically, as you mentioned, when your period starts, that's day one of your cycle. So you grab a Creighton chart, for instance, as an example, and you put a red sticker on day one of your chart. You write down the date and you write down, you know, describe your bleed. And 5 days of bleed, 5 red stickers. Then what happens, what's very, very common, is that many women will have dry days, and that means you put a green sticker. And that's called a day of infertility because it's dry. That means there's no sugar and water in your cervical fluid. There's no sugar and water to keep sperm alive. So your body won't keep sperm alive, basically, if you have intercourse that day. And then with the rise of blood estrogen, your cervix produces that sugar and water, and you put a white sticker. And a white sticker can correlate to what we call white flow in some societies. White flow means cervical fluid rich in sugar and water.
And then can you describe that for women who maybe want to try this out at home, like today, and just describe what that cervical fluid is?
Sure. So basically, when you're wiping yourself, you know, when you have your menstrual bleed, it's a wet sensation because you're bleeding. And then when you have a dry day, it's very noticeable. You're dry, like it's like you have no fluid coming out of you. And then what's really important is the change in sensation. So, and when you're wiping yourself, there's going to be a change in, hey, it slides, it's slippery, it's not dry. Your blood estrogen is rising and producing changes in your cervix to produce that sugar and water. So it's slippery, it's lubricative, it's a distinct change. And then you wipe for, you're wiping all day, but you only chart at the end of the day. And then, boom, it does stop abruptly. And the change is so noticeable that even blind women know when they're fertile, because the sensation is the key to determining your fertility. The sensation is slippery, lubricative, or it ain't.
It's very, very cut and dry as you start practicing this. And then that last day of that slippery sensation is called your peak day because it correlates with peak estrogen levels. Peak day, peak estrogen levels. You write a P on the sticker on your chart, on that white sticker, which correlates to white flow, or it might have a baby on it, which correlates to fertility. And then the next days should be a noticeable change, and you write 1, 2, 3. Your body is still fertile for 72 hours after your peak day because, A, the cervix is open still, and, B, your body is still has sugar and water in it because cervical fluid, as described by Eric Odeblad, is very it coats the inner body very effectively. So your inner body is still has sugar and water in it, and it takes about 3 days for that to disintegrate. And then as of peak plus 4, you're no longer fertile, and those are days of infertility. And so, and then your next period will come if you're not pregnant. And those are sort of the basics of charting. There are apps out there. For me personally, I learned it one-on-one, in the 90s. And I felt I needed the one-on-one instruction. And I just found that was very effective for me because I really gained clarity and confidence quickly when I was taught this charting. So I'm biased. I have the way to go. But
sorry, what is the one-on-one, Dr. Pope?
Well, the one-on-one.
What is, can you explain the one-on-one?
Well,
what you're talking about?
Because no two women are alike. People say to me, what does lubricative mean? What does slippery mean? People are not comfortable with these new sensations and these new observations. They've never been taught this before. So I find I need to see my patients for about 4 or 5 appointments. And it takes about 2 or 3 months. They come every 2 weeks. So it's a little bit labor intensive in the beginning, but they need that hand-holding. They need that guidance. They need that repetition. They need that coaching to really understand what they're observing and what they're feeling. Because sensation is something you can't put in a photograph. You can't take a picture of it. Sensation is your personal experience. So I instruct people that when you're wiping, close your eyes. Close your eyes. Wipe from front to back and commit. You know, make a decision then and there, is it lubricative or not? And then open your eyes, see what's on the tissue, and then stretch it with a finger test to see if it's clear, if it's cloudy, is it stretchy? Because those are also hallmarks of fertility. If it's stretchy and a little bit clear, a little bit cloudy, that means there's a lot of sugar there, a lot of water, a lot of glucose and fructose that will keep sperm alive. And that's, you're definitely fertile that day. And this needs time. So I love it. I've been learning it and teaching it for over 20 years now, and I think it's a cat's meow. So I look forward to the day when all women do this. I've been teaching this in high schools now recently, and they've been very, very excited. So, you know, I think it's I look forward when it becomes even more mainstream.
Yeah, it's nice because it's a non-sexual way to get to know your body. Like, it's a way that a woman can explore her cervical mucus and feel that fluid, put it between her fingers, stretch it out. If it stretches a couple of inches, and, you know, then that's something that's exciting because it means you're fertile. And so many women just don't even know what that fact is. Many
exactly.
women just think that other fluids that come out of their body are discharged. They think it might be infection. And so it also allows women to discover normal, what normal is, which is I'm absolutely committed to helping my patients understand their normal body function and the variations of that. And that is why one reason why I think it's such an important tool. I use it. I teach all of my patients fertility charting if they're in their fertility years, like if they're in their reproductive years, because I think it's so important. And some women are completely eager to go there and check their body out, and other women are a little bit more hesitant. And so that's great. It's interesting to hear that you do that, that you have them come in every 2 weeks and really go through it, their own individual chart. And so,
you know, I think it's very seamless. Charting and naturopathic medicine really go hand in hand, because basically, as a naturopathic patient, we are asking our patients to take an active role in their health, to make active choices in what they eat and how they live and how they, you know, how they sleep, and really evaluate their lifestyle in depth. And so charting is another step in that direction, in the sense that we're asking you to be really aware of your body. And because when you do the charting, and then I tell my patients, look, okay, your chart now, you're going to be timing your blood tests. you're going to get blood tests now on peak plus 1, peak plus 3, peak plus 5, 7, 9, 11. We're going to test your progesterone and your estrogen post-peak. You're going to walk into the lab with that requisition form, and you're going to be, you know, using your chart as a roadmap to testing your hormones. And so it basically, and then you're going to be using your chart to take more B vitamins, let's say, post-peak, or certain herbs post-peak, or what I integrate is acupuncture, actually. I do post-peak and pre-peak acupuncture. So I don't say, come in on day 7, 14, and 21 for your acupuncture. I'm going to say, no, come in during your mucus days, and I'm going to help you with ovulation. Come in.
This is for women who are trying to get pregnant, of course.
We're trying to get pregnant. Or come in on peak plus 5, I'm going to help you with implantation. Or come in on peak plus 10 or 12, I'm going to help you with progesterone support. So the chart becomes your roadmap to treatment. And also it's a roadmap for continued assessment, because you're going to see on your chart, gee, my post-peak phase is stable. Oh, that's good. Uh-oh, my chart shows that I have spotting before my period. Well, that's a sign of low progesterone, for instance. Uh-oh, my chart shows that I have only 1 or 2 days of white flow. I should have 5 or 6. I could be low in estrogen. So it is a wonderful tool that reveals all kinds of information in women's health. And so I just think it's seamless with naturopathic medicine, because it just basically teaches what I call naturopathic literacy or health literacy to our patients, so they can make informed choices in their health. And I just think they go hand in hand. Absolutely.
Because all of these small symptoms, as you're revealing, all of these small symptoms, all these individual differences between we women, and of course this topic is about women specifically, but of course with men as well, mean different things. This is why naturopathic medicine is such amazing medicine for prevention, because we can understand the natural physiology of the body when things are going slightly wrong. You don't have to have PCOS. You don't have to have endometriosis in order to learn things about something that your hormones are imbalanced in your body. You can have just other slight menstrual irregularities, and you can use that, first of all, to understand your body, second of all, to improve your health. And we are going to come back with Dr. Nora Pope, naturopathic doctor. She is a naturopathic physician. She is a colleague of mine. She is a funky lady. I don't know if she goes by lady or if she's a funky woman. And I'm just going to go to break. And I'm enjoying the conversation, and I hope you are. And if anybody is out there listening and wants to call in, jot down this number. The number is 914-338-1887. That's 914-338-1887. Dr. Pope is an excellent instructor because she is so passionate and positive, as you can hear from her voice. And so I encourage you to give her a call and give us a call here live on the radio at 914-338-1887. Tune in after the break. This is Dr. Millie for Eating for Meaning.
She wants to know where the relationship is going. He didn't know it was going anywhere. Having an awareness of our differences can make or break a relationship. As men and women, we have no problem falling in love. The problem is staying in love. Janice Hoffman gives men and women easy-to-use tools to keep the passion alive in their relationship. The former training director for Mars Venus Institute, Janice Hoffman trained over 550 Mars Venus facilitators and counselors and developed curriculum for the Mars Venus workshops. Today, she is the award-winning author of Relationship Rules, 12 Strategies for Creating a Love That Lasts. Don't do more in your relationship. Do what you already do differently. Let Janice Hoffman teach you the skills to keep the passion alive. Get the passion back with Relationship Rules. Visit JaniceHoffman.com today and get your own autographed copy of Relationship Rules.
Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com, the largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today and meet your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on SpiritualSingles.com. That's SpiritualSingles.com.
And welcome back to the show. This is Dr. Millie, and I'm a naturopathic doctor. I'm a certified nutrition specialist. And in my one of my prior lives, I was also a doula and a perinatal naturopathic doctor, and working very intimately with women's fertility. And I worked with Dr. Nora Pope at that time, and she is a doctor who has continued and become more specialized in this area. I'm so happy to have her on the show today. We're having an amazing conversation. It's political, it's health-oriented, it's nutritional, and it's very informative and very instructional. And we're talking today about fertility literacy. What this means is understanding your own body's signs and symptoms to help you understand when you're fertile and when you're not, when you're capable of having a baby, and which part of the month you're able to have a baby, and which part of the month you're not. You're in the clear. And so this allows you to control your own intimate life, your own sex life, and also use it for postponing pregnancies, spacing out pregnancies, and do it in a healthy way that's not jeopardizing your chance to get pregnant in the future, like some other treatments that we know, like the birth control pill. Dr. Pope, tell us about the historical uses for charting.
This has been part of the human experience. There's been a lifelong, there's been an interest in the natural regulation of fertility. And in the 20th century, there were different doctors in different places in the world learning about fertility and ovulation. And I think this culminated in the 60s. With Dr. John and Evelyn Billings in terms of identifying the fact that when our body produces cervical fluid prior to ovulation, that cervical fluid that's rich in sugar and water that can keep sperm alive, it correlates with rising blood estrogen levels. And then when estrogen levels peak, that's your peak day, and that's when the cervical fluid changes quite dramatically, and you enter the post-peak phase or the luteal phase, the progesterone phase. And this has been, the regulation of fertility has been of an interest to anyone who wants to have a family, but then not have 20 or 30 children. This 20 children was sort of accepted if you lived on a farm and you needed many children to help you with the crops. But when we live in cities and also having children is quite costly, it's not feasible. So I think there's always been an interest. And Dr. Erik Odeblad, who is a physiologist in Sweden, did a lot of work in this. And I was sad. This came out, I think the timing was too bad. This came out in the late 60s, all this research. And the pill had come out in the 60s. And I think the pill won. The pill won in the 60s. And I'm very sad about that because I think it really postponed fertility literacy for decades. And The pill was easy to use. You take it every day and you didn't have to think about fertility. And so technology basically incurred illiteracy in our fertility. I think what's happened now in 2015 is that the world is a different place. The world is more polluted. Basically, fertility is, people are confused about fertility, they're ambivalent about fertility. We've had decades of messages where fertility is seen as a burden and not as a gift. And and I think medicine suffered in the 60s and 70s, I really do. I think medicine and really had taken a more high-tech, less natural direction. I think
medicine has hijacked fertility. It's absolutely hijacked it. It's hijacked it from the people who actually own it, which is the person with the body, or the person with the relationship. I mean, medicine cannot even cure or treat fertility problems. All it can do is implant and explant and cultivate and culture, and it's sad.
And so now I think what's happened is that there's a shift. I think there's a shift because people want help to know about their health. And so I'm quite encouraged now that people are questioning now the validity of taking a pill to suppress something that's healthy about you. Let's have a conversation. Let's increase communication about fertility and not just ghettoize women. I think there's been a shift. I really do. So I'm optimistic for the future.
Okay, well, that is great, and that's why you are doing such a fabulous job on the show. And I want to ask you one question then. So if a woman has been diagnosed with infertility, if she has maybe sought out IVF treatments or is thinking about it and shelling out the $20,000 per cycle, you know, how can something simple like charting possibly help?
What, first and foremost, if you're struggling with fertility, charting is going to give you very accurate assessment of where your hormones are at, because the chart is going to reveal when you're having ovulation or when you're having what I call an ovulatory event. I think the appearance and then the disappearance of that cervical fluid shows that your ovaries were trying to produce estrogen, your cervix was trying to produce cervical fluid, and your ovary was trying to ovulate. And so then and there, that's how you can time a proper ultrasound series. The chart will guide you on when to get those daily ultrasounds until you actually ovulate, because the appearance of cervical fluid means, okay, that's now there's something going on in the ovary, in the follicles trying to grow. And then charting is going to show to you whether or not you have enough progesterone or an adequate post-peak phase or an adequate luteal phase. So first and foremost, charting is going to give you the basics. And then after that, if you need progesterone replacement therapy, charting is going to reveal, typically, the Creighton model protocol is peak plus 3 to peak plus 12 for progesterone, if you're going to take the HRT route. But there are other ways, too. There are also natural therapies that can help. Also, if you're not producing enough estrogen, you may need other types of interventions, like dealing with your thyroid gland, assessing that. The thyroid and the ovaries have an intimate relationship in terms of the healthy regulation of fertility and of hormones. So the hormones, the thyroid should be assessed. Your adrenal gland should be assessed, because especially in polycystic ovaries, people tend to focus on blood sugar, very important, and insulin regulation, very important. But it could be the fact that your adrenal glands aren't producing enough precursors to hormones, that you're low in estrogen and your mucus is coming and going. So you need to address your adrenal glands as well. So charting is going to reveal, you know, your hormone levels in the most accurate way possible. And so that's why I think I call it start with the chart, start charting, and gain fertility literacy, or unfortunately gain infertility literacy, but it can be restored, absolutely. So that's what I love about charting.
Yeah, and so what you're really describing is that charting can be a tool for diagnosis, not only a tool for understanding your body, but also a way to work with your doctor and to work with, I mean, here I am bad-mouthing medicine all the time, but I love to do that. And because I'm such bullies anyways, and I'm just a rebellious nature, I can't help it. And so, but you can actually work with medical doctors by charting, even if the medical doctor doesn't even really know what you're up to, but that's a reason to employ a fertility specialist, a real fertility literacy specialist, such as Dr. Nora Pope, so that you can all work together on when to get the ultrasounds, on when to get the acupuncture, on when to go for the blood work. And so that's amazing. Now, I do have a couple questions, though, because the Creighton model is not something that I'm trained in, so I hear you talking a lot about the cervical fluid, of course, which is extremely important, but I'm trained in the Justice method, which is the symphothermal method, and you were just discussing the thyroid. And so the symphothermal method also incorporates basal body temperature, taking your baseline, your core body temperature before you get out of bed in the morning to know if you tend to be a cold person. Because, of course, people with thyroid problems have a hard time with conceiving a baby, especially hypothyroid. And this tends to be an underdiagnosed experience for a lot of women if they don't actually have abnormal TSH levels, for instance, and yet they have a cold core body temperature. So does Creighton model use that, or how do you incorporate that?
Well, actually, the creator of the Justice method, I forget her name. Do you remember her name? She's a midwife. Anyway, she studied the Creighton method as well. So the coding and the charting are very, very similar. And so there's a basically meeting of the minds there. Absolutely. I think why I like the Creighton method is that, Dr. Tom Hilgers and Creighton University and the whole team were the first to correlate, they introduced the international codes for how do you chart and cervical fluid. And so codes basically have a scoring system, which is very predictive of fertility. So I think that is one aspect I like about Creighton. In terms of fertility, cervical fluid is sort of the make or break link between the man and the woman in terms of a shared fertility. If a woman has no cervical fluid, the couple will never get pregnant. And so cervical fluid creates the inner environment. It's alkaline, it's high in fructose, glucose, and it keeps sperm alive. So in terms of fertility or shared fertility, you need the water. You need the sugar in the water from the man's seminal fluid and the woman's cervical fluid. What I like about symptothermal and body and taking temperature is that it's explaining infertility. And that's why I think it's appropriate to take your temperature for X number of months. It shows sort of patterns in your temperature, because you want a lower temperature before your peak and you want a higher temperature after your peak, because progesterone raises your body temperature. And so I think for infertility, symptothermal is great. And also it's great for traditional Chinese medicine as well. But in terms of fertility and postponing pregnancy, cervical fluid is a robust method. It is really a make-or-break feature of fertility. So I interweave all kinds of strategies when I'm dealing with someone wherever they're at in their reproductive health.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Geraldine Maddox, she was the founder of the Just Peace, and she was a midwife and a PhD-type doctor, researcher of women's health and anatomy. And so there are different methods for achieving the same information. And, you know, it is a labor-intensive to some extent. I mean, it's interesting and it's informative, and it's a call on a woman or on a couple to become engaged in the physiology. And it is a daily practice that has to be established, because you can't just assess on one's menstrual cycle on 1 month, because, you know, you could be ovulating from one ovary 1 month, and then the next month you might not be ovulating at all. So you could be fertile every other month, for instance. Or it just takes that long to really understand if your cycles, as you mentioned before, if your cycles are 28 days 1 month or 21 days the next month, and so what is going on. Or if your charts are, if your cycles are all over the place, like if you're only, you know, if you have your period some months for 3 days and some months for 8 days, and you never know. And so it really does take time and patience, which can be very difficult for people who wanted to have a baby yesterday. Can be very difficult. But ultimately, that is what's required for especially accurate contraception for people who want to use this method to avoid pregnancy. You really need to get to know your fertile days and your infertile days, especially if you have a month-to-month discrepancy in your ovarian cycle.
See, that's why I wish this information was shared with the public sooner. I mean, in schools, or, you know, in grade school, in high school, in medical school, because charting becomes very automatic and innate when you just, it becomes part of your routine. And in the beginning, there is a bit of a struggle for some people who are highly stressed and have very busy lives. But really, what I've observed in my practice is that it becomes just automatic. Because I think when I instruct people to say chart with your eyes closed, wipe with your eyes closed, it becomes automatic, because then you develop this innate fertility awareness. It's just innate. You say, okay, I'm lubricative today. Oh, I'm not. Okay, I'm not fertile today. It's very, very quick. And it just, you need a bit of support in the beginning. But after a while, it's automatic. It's an automatic part of your day. And so, you know, it's like taking vitamins.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. And even personally, that is an automatic thing that you pay attention to your cycle, like you pay attention to having spinach in your teeth, or you pay attention to, you know, brushing your hair or what have you. And it just becomes one of those self-care things that you're using. And I do find that it's not forever that you need to take your basal body temperature before you get out of bed in the morning. And it's not forever that you need to put those dots necessarily, unless you're really actively trying to establish your cycle and become pregnant, and it's a challenge. So Dr. Pope, can you walk us through, I know you have mentioned peak plus 2 and plus 7 and all these numbers, but can you walk us through again, and I apologize if you have to repeat yourself, how charting guides clinicians as well as just the layperson out there trying to figure out her body into mm-hmm. accurately timing blood tests and ultrasound series?
Okay, sure. So basically, so you start, your first day of your period is cycle day one. And so you put a red sticker on the chart, and this could be up to 5 days. Now, if you see spotting, you know, a little bit of spotting after the 5 days, we call that tail end brown bleeding in the Creighton world. And that's a poor prognosis. That shows that you could be low in certain hormones. So, but you chart that as well. Even if you have one drop of spotting the whole day, it's still a red sticker. And that indicates that you have a hormonal imbalance. Okay. Then you're dry. You're wiping and you're dry. You put a green sticker, and green sticker indicates a day of infertility. And if you want to postpone pregnancy, you only have intercourse at the end of the day before ovulation. And you won't get pregnant. And that's called a pre-peak instruction. And then blood estrogen levels are rising, the follicle is growing in the ovary, and which in turn raises blood estrogen levels. Your body produces a white flow, and you put a white sticker with a baby on it, which signifies days of fertility. And basically, the hallmark of this of fertility is the sensation when you're wiping. Is it slippery when you're wiping from front to back? And I instruct women, close your eyes when you do this. And what is the sensation? Open your eyes. What are you observing? And then do a finger test to stretch it, because stretchability is also a hallmark of fertility as well. And there's a scoring system for all this. Okay, so you have X number of days of white flow, and then bang, the next day is quite dry. It's dragging when you're wiping. It's not slippery. It's not lubricative. The day before was your peak day. You put a P on this, and then the next 3 days are still fertile. You peak plus 1, 2, 3. They're fertile because your body is still sweet and alkaline with all that cervical fluid, because it's still coated your inner body. Sperm can stay alive in your body then, and the cervix is still open. So the actual rupture of the egg, of the ovulation, could be either peak minus one, peak plus one. Those 3 days are highly correlated to ovulation. We're talking about 95% here. After peak plus three, you're no longer fertile, and you can have intercourse any time of day, you know, peak plus four onwards. You won't get pregnant peak plus four onwards and have intercourse morning, noon, and night. And then
right.
If you don't get pregnant, your period comes. So I mentioned these, and I'm getting into a lot of detail here, because this has been very well studied for efficacy. The World Health Organization, you know, lists these studies for postponing pregnancy as being 98% effective. 98% effective. This is more effective than the pill, and it's non-toxic. So it's a very effective system, and like any good health, it requires a bit of commitment. And it brings couples closer together. This charting together helps maintain long-term committed relationships. So I like it for all kinds of reasons. And it just, it's a shared collaborative exercise between a healthy man and a healthy woman. And I use the term healthy to signify fertile. If you have a fertile man, a fertile woman, they can collaborate together to naturally regulate their fertility. And I think this is very equitable, and it's part of social justice for that matter. So,
absolutely. And you don't have to rely on like all of these kind of fluffy comparisons to like the withdrawal method, where you're basically just trying to prevent the sperm coming in just a shot in the dark any day of the month. You think you're just as fertile any day of the month as you are any other day, which is absolute rubbish that women do not know, nor do men know. It's also advantageous for men to know that women are only, they're only fertile, they're only capable of becoming pregnant during these, it can be anywhere from, let's say, 8 to 18 days of the month. And the 18 days
yeah.
is a stretch. It really just depends on
yeah.
the woman's cycle.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely. Also, I should mention
and the rest of the days, you can't get pregnant. You just can't get pregnant on those days.
Yeah, exactly.
So it reduces stress so much for somebody to know that. And when I tell my patients that, they're like, really? Like, they're 40 years old and they never heard that before in their life.
Yeah. No, it's anyway, this is a public health imperative.
That is. I agree. I'm so happy you're here, Dr. Nora Pope.
Thank you.
And I'm going to go to break, and then when we come back, we've got some other issues to talk about. So I'll let you choose, and you lead what you want to talk about when we come back, because we'll come back and then we'll have about, 12 or 13 minutes, and I'll also have you give out your information again, how everybody listening can get in touch with you, and join us back. This is the Eating for Meaning. I'm your host, Dr. Millie Lytle, and I've got on a very special guest, fertility literacy expert, Dr. Nora Pope, naturopathic physician.
She wants to know where the relationship is going. He didn't know it was going anywhere. Having an awareness of our differences can make or break a relationship. As men and women, we have no problem falling in love. The problem is staying in love. Janice Hoffman gives men and women easy-to-use tools to keep the passion alive in their relationship. The former training director for Mars Venus Institute, Janice Hoffman trained over 550 Mars Venus facilitators and counselors and developed curriculum for the Mars Venus workshops. Today, she is the award-winning author of Relationship Rules, 12 Strategies for Creating a Love That Lasts. Don't do more in your relationship. Do what you already do differently. Let Janice Hoffman teach you the skills to keep the passion alive. Get the passion back with Relationship Rules. Visit JaniceHoffman.com today and get your own autographed copy of Relationship Rules.
Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com, the largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today and meet your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on SpiritualSingles.com. That's SpiritualSingles.com.
Okay, and welcome back to the show. This is Eating for Meaning that you are listening to. I'm your host, naturopathic doctor, Dr. Millie Lytle, and I have on as my guest today, calling in live from Toronto, Canada, Dr. Nora Pope. Dr. Nora Pope is a board-certified naturopathic physician in private practice in Toronto, where she has been practicing since 2002. She is a wonderful, energetic, and well-informed, up-to-the-moment doctor for all the millennials as well as beyond. And we're talking today about Start with the Chart, how to get to know and gain body fertility literacy. And so we've got about 12 or 13 minutes left, Dr. Pope. What else do you have to say? What else would you like to share with the people listening today?
I think what's important is that I look forward to the day, Millie, when fertility is not viewed as a burden, that fertility is discussed in the context of what a healthy body can do. And because what I find so exciting about being a naturopathic doctor are all the interrelationships with our health. I started using charting on my patients for women who had seizures. That was really the first time I started using it, because low progesterone can trigger a seizure in some women. And so this was, for them, my female patients, they were very excited to learn about their bodies. And then what I found, the next patient population that got really interested in charting were couples in their 40s, and they felt this was their last chance to get pregnant, and they were dying to learn about their days of fertility because they'd been on the pill for 20 years. And I say they because I say the man was on the pill as well as the woman, because it's the couple together that would chose to postpone their fertility and postpone making a family. And so what I was seeing is that, you know, charting was really a wonderful diagnostic tool for infertility, not just a hormone imbalance. And then the next wave of my patients are what I would call more socially aware patients who started going on the pill when they're 14 or 15, very, very young. They're now 24, and they think, oh, my God, I don't think I'm fertile. You know, was I fertile at 14? Was I ever fertile? And they're realizing that, gee, going on the pill was ignoring my health problem, postponing a health solution. They went on the pill because they had really bad cramps, or they had painful periods, or even worse, they had no periods. They weren't even ovulating, because the pill creates a fake cycle. And so I want to reach parents and, you know, and really invite them maybe not to put their daughter on the pill if they're experiencing a hormonal discomfort, and really think about treating the root cause of their illness. And I'm asking people out there to be curious about their health, because the body has a vocabulary. Our physiology has a vocabulary. It is telling us stuff about our function every day. And so you start with the chart, you gain fertility literacy, and you gain health literacy, because charting can reveal you being at risk for seizures, or being at risk for infertility, or being at risk for developing eczema, allergies, asthma. The allergy component is so interesting. When I was doing a lot of research on epilepsy, I noticed a correlation between low cyclic AMP, I'm getting technical here, and seizures. Cyclic AMP balances histamine. So if you have healthy cyclic AMP, you have balanced histamine, less allergies. If you have balanced cyclic AMP, you have balanced progesterone. So charting can reveal a hormonal imbalance, which in turn can reveal a risk factor for all kinds of conditions. So I look forward to the day when fertility is, I'm fertile, good. This is the first step in being healthy. And I think where we're still at right now is that fertility, oh my God, what a burden. Last thing I want is to get pregnant. I want that conversation to shift. And I want people to feel safe and happy about their fertility, and it's not viewed as a dangerous, unsafe, you know, situation. That's what I really want for people out there.
Yeah, because it's thinking past an accidental pregnancy into a longer term solution, that there is actually an entire wisdom that people are cutting themselves off of, and that is really absolutely available to them. And mm-hmm. the wisdom is that you can prevent pregnancy on your own without the birth control pill, as you can plan your own pregnancy without the birth control pill and without so much medical intervention, because it doesn't need to be a mystery. Your body doesn't need to be this kind of random accident or overly kind of processed or processized situation that you have to rely on other people to tell you when, you know, to have sex with your husband, or when to when to take the morning after pill, or, you know, all these other even more detrimental side effects to the current state of norm that we're in right now. And I did mention that you're a doctor for the millennials before, not by accident, because I actually think that it's this new generation, people born since 1980, that are really changing the world. I really do see the children of the baby boomers and that Generation X and after that as really a status quo loving group, and the kind of the fear of poverty kind of mentality, to no fault of their own, but it's just what's happened through our culture, whereas I really feel like the millennials are ready to take on new information and process the world differently and are ready and available to really new modes of thinking, and I don't know if you've gone and thought about those kinds of things, but here in New York it's a really big topic of conversation. Kind of the enlightened world is coming, and it's, you know, if you want to put it in astrology terms, the age of Aquarius is here, or if you want to think of it in economic terms, that prosumerism is coming, and so we're all actually intimately involved in our experience, and we're not just being set up to be consumers, but we're actually prosumers, which are we're producing and consuming. And so I really do feel like taking control of your own fertility is kind of a cultural shift. And I'm happy to hear you say that you think that we're ready for it. I also agree with that. I think we are.
Yeah, no, I've noticed that, like I said, it's very recent, the last 18 months. Like, I had the first wave of my patients in, about 13 years ago, women with seizures. It was a very serious condition, and they wanted, you know, looking for answers everywhere. So they were curious because they wanted to learn about the root cause of their seizures. And then the next wave was couples in their 40s. And then couples in their 30s. I said, this is interesting. Even couples in their 30s, now women in their 20s or young couples in their 20s, gee, they can't conceive. So it's really alarming. It's and now teenagers in Toronto aren't getting pregnant. So I think infertility
that's the best statistic of the day.
Yeah, no. But they're definitely having sex, you know. They're definitely having sex. So there's something going on here, and you know, I think the pill in our water supply isn't helping fertility and health. Absolutely not. So I look forward to the day when the pill is obsolete. So.
Yeah, and so it's funny because we know all the risks of HRT, and that's been thoroughly investigated. And it's interesting that HRT was positioned as such a danger, and yet still the birth control is the treatment for endometriosis. It's the treatment for fibroids. It's the treatment for acne. It's the treatment for irregular periods. I mean, yeah. Still, really, that it's the dominant treatment. I mean, it really blows my mind that we would consider estrogen-dominant conditions with more estrogen.
Yeah, there was a study that came out just last year. I mean, it was really, really interesting. It was talking about patient consultations, specifically in the area of family planning. And it said here in this study, 41% of female patients ranked questions about safety as one of their top concerns. So they want to know, is it safe to go on the pill, for instance? But only 20% of doctors thought that discussing safety was a top priority. So there's a huge gap here. Women want safety as part of their medicine. This is called informed consent. And doctors think, okay, well, what's going to work? And, you know, basically, let's suppress fertility. And, gee, without thought about, gee, is this safe for the woman? Is it safe for the planet? And so I hope that changes. But I think that's part of the problem why the pill is not getting blamed for the ecosystem being unbalanced where HRT is, because women on HRT just aren't interested in making babies anymore or can't make babies. But women in their 20s, oh my God, we don't want babies. So let's not talk about the pill as being something dangerous. And I think that's wrong. I think that's wrong. Informed consent is the cornerstone of medical ethics. And I don't think teenagers and women in their 20s have full informed consent when they're being prescribed the pill. So this is a big issue, and I'm seeing more women now question the safety of the pill, and I'm delighted.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, and not to be kind of flippant about safety, but it is, you know, it's more possible and more likely for a 70-year-old woman to die from any kind of medical intervention than it is for a 30-year-old woman to die of any medical intervention, because a 30-year-old is still absolutely thriving. She has so far fewer risks for all sorts of conditions that a 70-year-old woman, you know, has more risk factors for. And so it's very unlikely that a 30-year-old woman is going to get a stroke, whereas it's pretty likely that a 70-year-old woman is going to get a stroke, especially if she has some high blood pressure and especially if she's on HRT. And so when we're assessing risk, if we're looking at kind of the strength or the health, overall health of the population, it's a lot more difficult to do harm to an already healthy and thriving population.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's well observed. That's well observed.
So I think that sometimes that's why these medications, like even antihistamines, or there's a whole lot of other medications that are given so rampantly to young people, we don't see the negative side effects and the overall burden of iatrogenesis, as that word again, where medicine is actually causing us ill health, because the population that they're given to is already so stable. Stable in wellness. And it's, you know, it takes a lot of vitamin deficiencies to kill a 30-year-old. So life does prevail. So, but anyway, our interest is kind of making people even more healthy and maximizing health and maximizing wellness. And this is a wonderful, powerful tool for many women to possess, and all couples to possess, if they're, whatever their goal is at the moment, if they're trying to prevent or to achieve pregnancy. And so, Dr. Nora, we only have 1 minute left, and so could you please let the dear audience know where they can reach you, and maybe where you'll be speaking next, or how they can find you on the internet, or any sorts of videos you'd like to give out.
I'm doing my website is isisclinic.ca. Isis, it's isisclinic.ca. That's my clinic in Toronto. And I'm speaking again. Actually, I'm doing two engagements in Toronto in the month of May, and I'm really happy about it. It's psychiatry and hormones with the Orthomolecular Society, and so I'll be speaking about charting your cycle,
as being a diagnostic tool for psychiatric conditions, because unfortunately conditions like polycystic ovaries have a lot of comorbidities like schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. And so rather than give antipsychotics, why not restore hormone balance as a way of alleviating some of the psychosis and hallucinations triggered by a hormonal balance in the brain? So
this is
imperative. I was a medical power of attorney last summer, and I was visiting patients in the psychiatric ward of a Toronto hospital extensively. And what struck me is how many women had facial hair who were, you know, on very strong antipsychotics and weren't getting better. So I just think, and so that's something I'm going to explore at my next lecture at the Orthomolecular Society in Toronto. So I'm excited about that. But anyway, it's isisclinic.ca is how you can reach me. And Google me, of course, and I'd be delighted to help anyone who's interested in restoring their health balance and optimizing their fertility awareness. Those are my passions.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pope. We are out of time today, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in, and thanks to my producer, Paula, and we'll see you next week on Eating for Meaning, Thursdays at 12. Take my advice and feel better, Dr. Millie, for Eating for Meaning.